This is KBOO Portland. Coming up next, it's Voices from the Edge, and Linda Olsen Osterlund is in the studio. She's hosting today, and she's going to be talking about Julian Assange, and she'll be taking your calls. That's coming up in just about 3 minutes. At 9 o'clock, it's Press Watch with Teresa Mitchell, her weekly look at the news you're not supposed to know. Dennis Bernstein with Flashpoints at 10. At 11, it's Between the Covers. David Naiman will be discussing the Book of Lost Saints, an evocative, multi-generational Cuban-American family story of revolution, loss, and family bonds with New York Times best-selling author Daniel Jose Older. At 11:30 on Words and Pictures, conversations with pioneering animators and comics artists. KBOO is independent, it's member-supported, non-commercial, volunteer-powered community radio. And by making a donation through the Give Guide on kboo.fm/give, you're eligible for over $4,000 of free and discounted products from your favorite Portland brands. If you'd like to become a member, go to kboo.fm or use our mobile app. Click on Donate. Voices from the Edge, next.
KBOO at the Clinton is a monthly film series that benefits your community radio station. This month, we'll show the documentary film The Cave on Thursday, December 12th at 7 p.m. at the Clinton Street Theater. The Cave is a story of female doctors saving lives in a secret underground hospital in Syria. The film follows the women as they contend with daily bombardments, chronic supply shortages, and the ever-present threat of chemical attacks. It paints a stirring portrait of courage, resilience, and female solidarity. Again, that's The Cave on Thursday, December 12th at 7 p.m. at the Clinton Street Theater, 2522 Southeast Clinton Street in Portland. More information is available at kboo.fm on the right-hand side of the homepage under Community Events.
KBOO Community Radio holds open meetings concerning the operations and programming of KBOO in accordance with requirements of the Communications Act of 1934 and certification requirements of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Information about KBOO Community Radio's open meeting policy is available by calling the station at 503-231-8032. Meetings will be conducted at 20 Southeast 8th Avenue in Portland, unless otherwise noted. The Personnel Committee meeting has changed for the month of December and will meet Thursday, December 12th, 6 p.m. at
Thank you, baby. Just wanna take a little time out. Thank you, baby.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Thank you for contributing to KBOO's membership drive. It was a success, and we couldn't have done it without you.
Thank you for your post, for your like, for your click. Thank you for your love, for your care, for your kind.
Get up, stand up, stand up for your right.
Good morning, and thank you for tuning in to KBOO Community Radio here in Portland, Oregon this morning. I'm very happy to have you out there as our listeners. Today we're going to be talking about Julian Assange and what's happening to him while he's locked up in the Balmarsh prison in London. It's actually pretty devastating. There's a new book that's coming out right now about it, and we're going to talk about that book. Hopefully in a month or so we'll be able to have some of the editors from the book be on in an interview that we'll have at that time. But at this time, we just have other information. Now, for you who aren't remembering, Julian Assange is the head of WikiLeaks. He continued to work on WikiLeaks even though he was locked up in the Ecuador embassy in London. And the reason he was there was because he was under threat of arrest from the United States, who wanted to arrest him and charge him with espionage for being a media publisher, for publishing the papers that Chelsea Manning and the videos that Chelsea Manning put out. And those showed us that our country was performing in ways we would never have believed, including the very famous video of two people two of U.S. soldiers using, I guess, missiles to kill people on the ground and laughing about it, and knowing that these were not the soldiers, you could tell by the video that they could see, and it brought out the horror of what we bring to the war. And so, of course, the ruling class does not want that out there. But more recently, there was a huge release from WikiLeaks of emails from the DNC, and now the Democratic Party has never been so happy to try to go after a journalist. So this is what we're going to be talking about. We are going to be opening the lines for you to call in. It's 503-231-8187. Before we do that, I'm going to bring you some audio that was taken from a presentation about the book In Defense of Julian Assange, the new one that's coming out. It's edited by Tariq Ali and Margaret Kunstler. And the first voice you'll hear, it's about an 8-minute audio. The first voice you'll hear will be Margaret Kunstler. The next person speaking will be Aaron Maté, also a journalist, well-known journalist. And the fourth will be Nathan Fuller, the director of the Courage Foundation, which has been taking up the cause of defending Julian Assange. So take a little bit of time, listen carefully. It's not bad audio, and you'll find out a lot more about why this book is important, why it's out. Here we go.
These are very, very dangerous times. We see what's happening to the world. The right wing is taking over, and we're not in any control, and everything is getting narrower and narrower. And it's also a time when we're being distracted from what is really happening and not paying attention to the important things. What is happening is that the powers that be are upping the ante. Charging a journalist with espionage is eating the First Amendment. It's outrageous. The First Amendment doesn't allow for an espionage charge. The entire indictment violates the First Amendment. And anybody who's a journalist who is sensitive to this knows that this is a total threat to news gathering, to giving out information, and to educating people about what's happening. It's a total threat. And on the other side of it, Julian is being housed in a prison as if he's a terrorist. So this is really upping the ante. We're getting rid of the First Amendment, and we're holding Julian as if he's a terrorist. He's a journalist. He should be out on bail. Why is he in a 24-hour segregation, isolated in a maximum security prison? This is where we are. This is a terrible situation. Secrecy is power, and Julian's ability to inform people has really saved many people. And if you read in this book, Jen Robinson, who is one of Julian's lawyers and a human rights attorney, she describes how the work that Julian has done has saved her clients. And she's really thrilled because she gets to use the information that he puts out. If you read what Michael Ratner says at the end, he says, well, things have been going so badly that Julian is only the light, because he's had so many cases in which national security has been brought up as the reason why he can't go forward, that he looks at Julian as the possibility of going forward, and he doesn't see any possibility. So we have a lot of different views in this book, and it's a wonderful book, and I hope you all purchase it and share it and use it as a tool the way other people are. Thank you very much.
I'm a journalist with The Nation magazine, and I host a new show called Pushback with the Gray Zone. Thank you for having me. I'm really honored to be able to speak to you. When Robert Mueller gave his long-awaited closing testimony in July, it actually wasn't a very significant event. We didn't learn very much. We learned, I think, two main things. The first thing we learned is that Robert Mueller didn't know the basics of his own investigation. But that, to me, didn't really matter much, because I think we all know now the Russia investigation itself was pretty much a joke. And so it was fitting that its putative head didn't know much about it. The other significant thing from that hearing, I think, came when Robert Mueller was asked whether he agrees with Secretary of State Mike Pompeo's assessment that WikiLeaks is a, quote, hostile intelligence service. And Robert Mueller, without flinching, said, absolutely. And I found that moment so striking, because here is the person who we were told for 2 years was going to be the answer to Donald J. Trump and end his presidency. and was presented to us as a liberal hero. Well, here he is co-signing and endorsing the reactionary viewpoint of the Trump administration when it comes to a media publisher, a publisher who was demonized because he exposed the secrets of the powerful, and therefore he had to be silenced. And the irony on top of that, Robert Mueller was supposed to be the answer to Trump and his hatred of media freedom and all of our liberties. Well, here was Robert Mueller in lockstep with Trump in an assault on media freedom. And it captured to me what I think has been a very worrying dynamic of the Trump era, where liberals and progressives have been enrolled under the guise and the pretense of opposing Trump in a very toxic reactionary mindset that is actually ultimately used to attack the left. And I think Julian Assange has been a martyr in that assault. When we think about people who are demonized here in the West, it's usually reserved for leaders, foreign movements that we want to overthrow with regime change or proxy wars. Saddam Hussein, Gaddafi, Bashar al-Assad. But rarely has the sort of apparatus of demonization been used against somebody in the West like it has against Julian Assange. And who is he? He's not even a political leader. He's a media publisher. And what does he do? He publishes accurate information. And yet, in the Trump era, what's been so concerning is that liberals have been enrolled in this assault on him. And we've seen that play out. The irony of Robert Mueller calling WikiLeaks a hostile intelligence service, when meanwhile media outlets across the West have been enrolled as pretty much arms of U.S. intelligence efforts to demonize dissent. And Assange is exhibit A. I mean, look at the way he's been covered. Randy Credico, who was here, he was cast in a starring role as as being in this wild conspiracy theory that he was a conduit between Roger Stone on behalf of the Trump campaign and WikiLeaks on behalf of Julian Assange, even though all the available evidence, as was apparent from the start, undermined that crazy theory. And media outlets took part in this. There was a piece this summer on CNN purporting to show, based on surveillance footage from the Spanish company that was hired to spy on Julian Assange, how Assange conspired with Russian hackers. And it was this elaborate tale, and it was all based on essentially a fiction. And later on, when it came out that the same Spanish company had been used by the CIA to spy on Julian Assange, have cameras in the women's bathroom at the Ecuadorian embassy, the media attention to that was pretty much nil. It was reported in Spain. It got almost no coverage here, and it was deemed to be almost normal that we'd be surveilling a media publisher. When I think about Julian Assange, for me, this is not just about standing up for this brave person who has been subjected to this, you know, unspeakable persecution. It's also not just about defending media freedom that we all know the case against him very much threatens, but it's also about standing up to a really toxic effort to enroll liberals and progressives in an assault on their own values. I can't express my appreciation enough to Julian Assange and his supporters for standing up to that and for shining a light on the powerful that want to silence him. So, thank you.
I'm Nathan Fuller, director of the Courage Foundation, and want to thank Colin and OR Books for putting this together, and thank you all for being here. Royalties from this book are going to go to the Courage Foundation, and so I figured I should tell you what that's all about. In 2014, we started Courage, in its international organization, in right now primarily US and the UK, as a hub for whistleblowers, a support network of all kinds for whistleblowers and other journalistic sources. And so we helped make Edward Snowden's documents searchable, the whole archive, text searchable. We've raised funds and awareness for Jeremy Hammond and Chelsea Manning and their legal teams, especially since the Moreno administration started tightening the screws on Assange in the embassy. We've been really focused on supporting Assange and WikiLeaks. And that means we raise funds for the legal defense team in the UK, and we write a daily live blog about political, legal developments, Assange's prison conditions, which, as you've heard, are horrendous. And in the US here, I help organize events. And to that end, we can announce that on February 12th at People's Forum in Midtown, we'll have a big Assange and press freedom event. So that's just 2 weeks before his extradition hearing in London. And James Goodale, who's the former New York Times general counsel, who defended that paper's right to publish the Pentagon Papers, will be speaking there as well. So look out for that. We'll have more information and other speakers and everything going forward. So yeah, I just want to thank you all for coming here. Thanks for the book and event, and appreciate it. Take care.
And you were listening to a presentation on the new book, In Defense of Julian Assange. And you were listening to Margaret Kunstler, Aaron Matei, and then just then, Nathan Fuller, a director of the Courage Foundation. All of the royalties from the book will be going directly to the Courage Foundation and their support for the getting Julian Assange out of jail and free from threat of extradition. So I'm inviting you to call in right now. I have some more information for us, Chelsea Manning and what's happening with her, the update on that. And also another person who's in jail as a whistleblower, a woman you may not have heard much about. Her name is Reality Winner. And she was the first in the United States to be served with the Espionage Act, charged with the Espionage Act, and is now doing 5 years in jail for what she did. So we'll talk a little bit more about this, and we'll talk a little bit more about the Assange case. But I want to hear from you. I think our ruling elites here and around the world would wish nothing more than we forget about Julian Assange until he's just punished as badly as possible, and then things could go on. But I think we need to speak up about why should we want to protect it. There are, by the way, many journalist organizations that are standing by him vehemently and saying that this is an attack on all journalists if they can attack Julian Assange as a media publisher. So give us a call. It's 503-231-8187. And I want to hear from you about this cause and what you want to do and what you think it should be done. One of the things that's a little bit hard right now is it feels like, well, it's out of our hands. It's over in the UK. I know I found myself thinking that. What do I do? Get my senator to call Balmarsh Prison? Well, you know, maybe that wouldn't be such a bad idea. But I do think we can lean on our own representatives, all wanting us to vote for him coming up soon in terms of, different offices next year. So given that they want us to vote for him, let's tell them what it would take to vote for them. And I think that them taking a public stand, maybe it's introducing a bill in Congress, maybe it's making a statement, a public statement about it. I'm not sure what actions they could take, but they need to take actions because the truth about what's happening to Julian Assange is they're killing him. So there's the really hard news of this, guys. What I'm talking to you about is every day he's in there, the chances of him regaining his physical and mental health are less and less. I did a lot of work a few years ago when I had a program called A Deeper Look. Some of you out there in the audience may remember it. And I did a lot of work around solitary confinement and the effects of solitary confinement and the use of them within this country. I was investigating the solitary confinement of the Angola Three at that time, who have all waged successful battles together and are now out of there. The one died a few days after release. But that was a successful battle of people fighting solitary. But during my research, I spoke to Dr. Brown, who was a psychiatrist working with prisoners back, I believe, in Rhode Island, and other experts. And it turns out that you and I, we need conflict. I mean, not conflict, we need contact. We need to actually touch other people. We need to hear their voices. When we speak, we wait for a response. Our brain sits in readiness for that response. That's why, radio people are kind of a little crazy because we're not getting our response back. It's hurting our brain when we don't hear from you about what we're saying or what we're thinking or what we're bringing to you. But really, literally, solitary confinement done right can damage the brain in as little a time as a week. And people say, well, how can it damage the brain? And I want to take you back to, say the case of a woman named Shivo, a woman whose family did not want her to be taken off assisted living, even though the doctor said she was dead and that her brain had produced no living thoughts or feelings in a very long time. Well, once that all got sorted through and the case went through and stuff, it turns out her brain could not have come alive to say hello to her family because all of the structures of the brain had dissolved. When we don't use a part of our body, it deteriorates and does not function. And so think about it. When you're not using that part of your body that's listening for response, looking for response, hearing the response, looking for touching, needing to be touched to feel real, Those parts of our body are very important. They're integral to our whole health. There's no mental health separate from body health. And so solitary confinement is very, very harsh. And all accounts of Julian Assange say that he's lost over 30 pounds, that he is very weak, that he had difficulty being able to say his name and where he was when speaking to attorneys who most recently visited him. They came back this last month, just a few weeks ago, very, very distressed. I believe there's a Flashpoints, the show from KPFA that we play here, really great program, syndicated program, and they had some of the people on who had met with Julian recently, and he shows all the signs of extreme mental deterioration and an inability even to pull himself out of a sort of, head-down slump. This is very, very dangerous. We can't allow them to do this to journalists. You out there are listening to independent radio, and I'm assuming you're interested in independent radio because you don't want to have any government or any censor of that sort get in between you and information that you believe is important to you in your life and in your country. We need to defend Julian Assange, and I'm challenging you to do that. You know, I want to also challenge those who want to say, oh, I don't give a hoot about Julian Assange, to call it as well, because that's part of the conversation. They would love for us to stop giving a hoot about him, and we've heard many things in the past that would make us think, oh, he's not a good guy. Why should I waste energy on him? You should waste it because it's all journalists, it's all publications, and it's all human beings. When they can twist the laws in ways to put someone like this in solitary confinement, who has not been, by the way, convicted of anything, that's pretty rough. So give us a call, 503-231-8187. Are you out there? I don't know. It's Thursday morning. We do have another piece of audio that I could play for you. I'll go ahead and get that for you. Just one second. Forgive my cough. This piece of audio will give you a inside look at what happened in the Ecuador embassy. The recent documents have come out that prove that there was an organization working for Spain, working for the U.S., a private organization that was spying on him the whole time he was in the Ecuador embassy. So here we have some audio about that.
The Embassy of Ecuador in London. For almost 7 years, U.S. state enemy number one resided here. Julian Assange. From his exile, he continued to work for WikiLeaks. Police and secret services had to stay outside. Only selected visitors, such as politicians, journalists, and lawyers, were allowed inside the embassy. They were not controlled by the police, but by a security company which worked on behalf of the Ecuadorian government. Its name? UC Global.
The only goal should be protect the embassy with the guest, the political asylee.
However, according to research by the German investigative TV show Panorama, the security company apparently had a second secret client. It was for this client that Assange and his guests were systematically spied upon. The founder of UC Global, David Morales, is said to have sent requests to his employees. These would come from American friends. A former employee said about the boss, when I asked him who his American friends are, he replied, US intelligence. Employees are said to have uploaded audit logs and videos to a server that apparently was accessible to American users. Journalists visiting Julian Assange, for example, Glenn Greenwald. Activists, colleagues, and lawyers. Meetings with his famous supporter, Vivian Westwood. In the monitoring material which German public broadcaster NDR NVIDIA could evaluate are four videos of the actress and activist Pamela Anderson. While she spoke to Assange, the security staff seemingly spied on her phone and wrote down her password here. Assange's guests were apparently being recorded systematically. Serial numbers of mobile phones, visit logs, endorsements, and observations. The monitoring material also includes documentation of a reporter from our team, including his American passport. John Goetz has visited Julian Assange more than a dozen times for the German public broadcaster NDR and the German newspaper Süddeutsche Zeitung.
Journalists
like us went there, of course, to make editorial arrangements, to talk about the safety of sources, to talk about the source of documents. There were sometimes documents that were very secret, and so, of course, you had to be careful with those. Allegedly, at the request of the Americans, UC Global was asked to record the tone of discussions from 2017. Internal emails say, "The indoor cameras should have a built-in microphone that is invisible to the naked eye." In December 2017, the company apparently installed new cameras with microphones and also an additional bug in the fire extinguisher.
It's like, well, any organization's decision-making speed is based upon health.
Visiting controls of Assange's lawyer. Aito Martinez defends him against the U.S., for important talks, Assange often leads his lawyer's team into the ladies' room for fear of surveillance. Julian Assange was always worried about being bugged, but we never thought that this surveillance would get that far, as it now had been revealed. According to the testimony, a bug was also hidden in the ladies' room, in a cable behind this package. The fact that they recorded conversations between Assange and his legal team violates attorney-client privilege, which is a fundamental right in every democratic country. In Spain, where the headquarters of UC Global are located, the National Court has launched investigations against the security company and its boss. The lawyer of UC Global agreed to an interview to discuss the allegations of illegal wiretapping. The company denies this completely, because it is obviously wrong. It is not of interest to the company, and private conversations were never recorded. And also, it is technically impossible. But I've seen videos with sound recordings. They exist. Why are you denying it? Because until today, I have never heard them. And what was the relationship between David Morales and the United States? I already said that UC Global has worked with the U.S. intelligence service multiple times, but not in this specific case. American authorities did not comment on the allegation of having ordered the wiretapping at the embassy of Ecuador. The German public broadcaster NDR has filed a lawsuit on Thursday against UC Global for violating privacy and personal rights regulations.
You were listening to a presentation of an audio of... one part of it was from a German organization that's gotten information of the secret leaks by UC Global. It's a firm that's hired by the UK and is working in the Ecuador embassy. They are based in Spain, and they apparently went to great lengths to bug all of Julian Assange's rooms and his visits with visitors. You know, I always thought, well, an embassy, you know, that wouldn't be too bad to stay in an embassy. Nice carpets, velvet window coverings, you know, it could be nice. And the more I hear about the situation he was in, where he really, after, you know, the positive membership of the Ecuadorian government that had supported him was no longer there, he was really in a very difficult situation, and it didn't change, and it was very hard for him to be able to interact with other people. So he was already having a lot of difficulty functioning before he was taken into the prison. And now in that prison, Balmarsh Prison, it's a notorious prison in London, his health has really gone downhill, his physical and his mental health. I think they'd be happy to deliver him back to the public as a broken man. Some of you may remember early after 2001, or maybe it was even before that, some of the bombers, when a man named Padilla, an American citizen, was basically taken through the process of breaking down his whole personality and then having him testify to other stuff. He really was destroyed, as say his family. I do have an article here from Julian Assange's dad, who says that the situation that Julian is facing in there has been extremely difficult, and that he's very worried about Assange's health right now, and that he feels it's completely illegal and against, for the U.S., it's against our, you know, right to freedom of press. He has not stolen or done anything, but they want him silenced. And I'll remind you that there's Edward Snowden in London, and they will want him silenced too. Any success they have, they will carry forward. There are other whistleblowers we could talk about. Chelsea Manning, whose case is directly tied to Julian Assange. They have her locked right now. This is the second grand jury that has locked her up for refusing to testify about WikiLeaks and Julian Assange. She has said that she has said everything she knows and is going to say, and she's not going to say anymore. And has refused to answer the questions. But you can be held under a grand jury for up to 18 months in contempt of the grand jury. And if that grand, up to 18 months, because that's the length of a grand jury, but they can re-up that grand jury and do it again. And they have. I remember during the Clinton impeachment stuff, they locked up a woman named Mary McDougal, I believe is her name, and she was locked up for, I believe, well over a year because she wouldn't testify that she had had an affair with President Clinton. So they felt that that meant she needed to be locked up for 18 months or more. She never did admit to an affair that she says never did happen. So they use these powers ruthlessly, and they can use them ruthlessly targeted, and particularly on people like Chelsea Manning. The latest word from Chelsea Manning is she still seems very strong, and I believe she's communicating with people on Twitter. I saw some Twitters from her that were recent, so, you know, if you're a Twitterer, it might be very cool to start following Chelsea Manning and supporting her in her strength to say no to talking about Julian Assange. The number to call if you'd like to get in on this conversation, because I would really like to hear from you. You are our listeners, you're important to us. What you care about and think about matters. The phone number to dial is 503-231-8187. And we're talking about, for the sake of press freedom, Julian Assange must be defended. That's the headline on another article about what's going on and about journalists taking action. The Committee to Protect Journalists has taken a stand to support Julian Assange, and as have other journalistic organizations. But somehow, maybe it's because of the Trumpocalypse, you know, the constant, you know, if you're not watching hearings, you're watching court charges, or you're trying to read something else. I think maybe it's the continued onslaught of difficulties we're having in this world and problems we're having, I believe, in a lot because of the system and structures of government that we have throughout the world. Maybe that's got you overwhelmed and you can't really think about Julian Assange or, you know, whistleblowers. Is it that important? But whistleblowers absolutely are important. They're how we learn so much about what our government does. Don't forget, nobody's charging Assange with having published false information. That's not it. They're not saying, oh, this guy lied to you, tried to lie to you about what your government's doing. No, no, no. He took documents from others who wanted to let you know what its government is doing that reveal the depth and depravity of the U.S. military in their actions in war zones. And in other ways, he also, the emails that revealed the DNC and the trouble we were having with the DNC, spying on Bernie Sanders, trying to ruin Bernie Sanders' campaign and all sorts of other bad things they were up to. I do realize we now have callers. Let's get the first one. Brian, you're on the air.
Yeah, hello.
Good morning.
Thanks for doing this show. I often think about Julian and Chelsea Manning and Jeffrey Sterling, and the list goes on and on. And I was just going to say a little story that at Thanksgiving we went around the table, you know, what are you thankful for? And I actually said, I'm so thankful for the whistleblowers, the people that are willing to speak up. We're often, when I was growing up studying history, we often honor the great war heroes that in a moment of crisis they stood up and saved lives or did whatever it was and didn't worry about their own lives. But I think, personally, I think the whistleblowers go another step up. They very consciously make a thought through decision to risk the rest of their lives, to put themselves in a position that they could be living like Julian Assange, which is different than risking getting killed in the moment of battle. This is a very conscious thing that they're doing, and it's just amazing to me that they have that kind of courage, and that we should all sit at the Thanksgiving table and say thank you for doing what you're doing.
Yeah, I'm with you on that. You know, I knew of a group of young people that were being spied on by the FBI here. They were anarchists, and the FBI thought they had a particular crime that they wanted to get them for. And some of the members left the area because they did not feel that they could go through what the FBI would put them through, even though they had not committed any crime, because they had jailed two young people in the same way that they've jailed Chelsea Manning on failing to confirm their thoughts about or speak to a grand jury. And so others heard about the conditions they were under, and at least one other person left the area. These kinds of treatments are incredibly intimidating, especially if you feel that you're somewhat a vulnerable person to, you know, persecution or to emotional stress. The thought of being locked away is very, very hard. And you know, when we talk about Chelsea Manning, I maybe shouldn't be doubly impressed about it, but I don't know if you've noticed, but she's a very small, physically small woman, and you know, almost child size in her hands and stuff. And I'm not a very small woman, but I'm not a very large woman, and I just know that sense of intimidation of size, you know, large men approaching, you know. And she has now three times stood by her conscience and sat in the prison surrounded by people who had great hostility to her and who could do great physical harm. And I'm always so, wow, go girl. I'm so proud of her. I'm proud to know she exists in our society in this time.
Yeah, we often forget about some of those basic things, like the physical size and what it's like to be, you know, a trans woman in that system, and to be able to survive at all. It's just beyond me. And then maybe Jeffrey Sterling being a black man in that system, the kind of conditions and the kind of treatment that they're facing, which is even above what a white man might.
Exactly. They'll pile it on just a little bit heavier, won't they? Or maybe a lot heavier.
Yeah, that's courage beyond what I can even imagine. So I hope that more and more people, I hope people buy this book in droves.
Yeah. I think it's well worth it. I could give you the list of contributors, but it's huge and long and includes Pamela Anderson, which was a surprise to me of his visitors. Yeah. But, you know, just because a woman has a certain appearance doesn't mean she's not smart and got a good, you know, point of view. I had to chastise myself for being surprised about that. Well, we've got a couple more callers on, so thank you very much, Brian.
Thank you. Bye.
And my next caller is Annette. Good morning.
Yes, that's Annette with an N, N-I-N. And I'd like to say thank you for having this discussion. And the last caller pretty much nailed it on the head with what I wanted to say. I just wanted to say, I guess, trumpet what he just said, that these people are heroes. Itself is a crime that Julian Assange is in prison for committing no crime other than being a journalist.
Being willing and brave enough to publish the secrets of the governments from around the world.
Absolutely. War crimes are the crimes, not exposing war crimes. And Chelsea Manning is also a hero. And these people should not be where they're at.
No, I have a bumper sticker that one of our co-hosts here, Teresa Mitchell, made. A bunch of them in mine says, it says Manning and Snowden and Manning for, no, it says, yeah, Snowden and Manning in 2020. So, you know, we can just say we'd rather have people with conscience and strength and courage of their sort in 2020.
Yes, we don't need the 1% anymore. They're not doing us any favors.
No, not at all. They're not giving us jobs. They're not giving us support when we don't have jobs. The streets fill up and we keep being told our economy is better than ever. I'm just amazed that they say that with straight faces.
They just announced that there was 1 million children in New York City that are homeless right now. That's the true
Well, thank you so much for calling, Nanette. I appreciate it.
You betcha. Thanks for having the discussion today and sticking up for Assange and Chelsea Manning.
You're welcome.
Thank you so much. Bye.
And our next caller is Bart. Good morning.
Hi. Hi. Bart with an H. I hope you feel better. I hear you coughing in there.
Yeah, I'm sorry about that. I get a little asthma-y stuff going.
Yeah. Well, the Chelsea Manning, to jump onto that train a little bit, when she was first arrested, she was in military prison. So she was surrounded by people with guns and uniforms all the time.
Yeah.
And that was years worth. Before that got...
7 years, I believe, yeah.
Yeah. So, this is a tough cookie. I mean...
Really?
Yay.
Really? Tough mentally.
And physically. I mean, this can't have been any kind of walk in the park because she was an enemy of the state, and apparently she is still an enemy of the state.
The military in another case with a woman, she was a young woman shown in the Abu Ghraib photos. I read an article of hers where she talked about that she had to sit at a desk for 8 hours a day with her hands flat in front of it and her back straight and, you know, her in a thing. And she could not even look or speak to anyone throughout the whole day. She went through months and months and months of that. I think her last name was English. Yeah, they have their forms of torture that don't even look, you know, how can you say she was tortured? She was forced to sit and stare. That doesn't sound that bad, but we all know if we had to sit still with our backs upright, looking one direction and not speaking all day long, no, nothing to write on, nothing to read.
Well, the military as a class of persons has always found non-invasive, as it were, ways to bend people's will. You know, in the old days, if you messed up in basic training, you get to stand for X amount of time with your rifle held straight out in front of you. And, it could be an hour, it could be 15 minutes, it could be all day, and all day the next day.
They could give you a blanket party, too. That's what my brother found himself being asked to participate in, which is the one guy that you think of as the goof-off. The rest of the military says he's ruined and you're not going to get a leave because of him, and then they throw a blanket over his head and beat him. And that's how they train them to do what they want using violence. And that started in the first 2 weeks of training at, Fort whatever is up here towards Tacoma. During the Vietnam War. So, yeah, they definitely have their ways of getting to you, you know, because he found himself almost wanting to hit the guy because he really wanted his leave. And then my brother found himself going, what am I turning into? I don't beat up people because like them.
Right. Well, but the other part of this is the basic idea of military training, besides, you know, skill sets and discipline, is breaking down your personality and inserting the one that is more compliant and controllable. By doing these kinds of things and making them quote unquote group activities, you are reinforcing the norm of, group rule and of, imposing, your will over others, and also of breaking down the will of the persons that are participating in it by making them do something that would be beyond the
distasteful
pale
something they wouldn't do. And everybody gets kind of damaged and broken down and changed by that process. I do believe we have another caller on the line. I want to thank you for calling in, and
you bet.
We'll move on.
I think Mr. Assange deserves everybody's attention and praise.
Yes.
And this is your reality going down the tubes, people. This is your access to information being destroyed and thwarted. So step up, stand up, be up. Good luck. Good day.
Thank you. And now we have Ray on the line.
Hi.
Good morning, Ray.
Thank you for this program. It's very important to try to do something for Julian Assange, or at least tell people about him. It's and it's just part of the assault on the First Amendment in this country. And
well, and now they're holding him strictly to be extradited to the United States. He's not being held on crimes in London, and he's not being held on crimes from Sweden anymore because Sweden has dropped all the charges.
Yeah. Quite so.
So the sole reason he's there, and I think they like him to be there because they can break him down without having our local resistance.
Yeah, they're trying to get rid of him for sure and destroy his message and so forth. And all across the board, as the other callers have said, you know, whistleblowers are being persecuted everywhere. So I have a couple, it's not really off the subject, I just wanted to mention a couple of outfits that work against this as a public employees for environmental responsibility are PEER, and FC is Forest Service Employees for Environmental Ethics, and these are whistleblowers too, but they're working inside, you know, the Forest Service and various government agencies and so forth. But
that's great. So the first one was called Public Employees.
Yeah, it's Public Employees for Environmental Responsibility.
Okay.
And the other is our peer, you know, you can Google it, I guess. And then there's FC, Forest Service Employees for Environmental Ethics. And they've done a lot, you know, trying to stop the Trump administration's destruction of the environment. And so, you know, I thought I'd mention that, too.
No, I think that's good. It's really important. And, you know, it's often, well, it is. Look at all, who are the whistleblowers? They're people who are inside the system who can let us know about
exactly
things that are happening.
Yeah.
We otherwise, I mean, really, truly, they wanted to keep the whole knowledge about how extensive their surveillance and their control is around the world and how much their whole intelligence agencies are doing. They wanted that all to be under their control and kept away from our view, and that's the crime that Julian Assange and Chelsea Manning and Reality Winner did, is that they let us know what's really happening. Obviously not something we think should be a crime, but it seems like the oligarchs all over the world do.
Well, anything that goes against their propaganda, they're not going to like very much.
No, not at all. Well, thank you. Yeah, thanks for calling. Do we have another caller? Sean, good morning.
Good morning, Linda. So, you know, after you listen to Democracy Now! And Greta Thunberg's great speech there, and then you listen to this, and, you know, sometimes you were looking for callers, what do you have to say? Sometimes you feel so overwhelmed, you're not sure.
I know well, exactly what you mean. I sit out there and listen as well.
Yeah, but what came to mind for me, it's just simply, I realized it's something I quote out of Tim O'Brien's latest book called Dad's Maybe Book, which was a book he wrote to his two sons to eventually read. But, you know, he's a great novelist and writing about, you know, things related to his experience being in Vietnam.
Say his name again.
Tim O'Brien.
Okay.
And one of his great novels is called The Things They Carry. But he just wrote a great book, again, because he was late to fatherhood. So he, anyway, not to go on, but it just came to mind, there was a simple quote from his latest book that I thought was appropriate, and he said, "The filthiest truth is filthier than the filthiest lie." And I think that's really appropriate to what's going on with Julian Assange, and just overall when you speak up to power and so forth. You know, that,
yeah.
You know, the truth that they hear to them is filthier than the filthiest lie, and that's so much of what they base things off of. So that's
yeah.
Exactly why Tim said it.
Yeah, thank you for that. I appreciate that, Tim. I'm going to encourage you and everyone here, though, to take some sort of action on behalf of Julian Assange, whether it's, you know, forwarding an article to a friend or looking up the book and getting it. You know, there's all sorts of ways we can take to make support. You know, even a brief letter to the editor to one of our local newspapers can make a difference, and certainly a call to your, you know, Merkley and as a senator is definitely, you know, wanting to hear from people and wanting people's support, and so is Earl Blumenauer. Perhaps there's ways that we can get them to pressure the government to drop the charges, drop do their part to try to get the extradition stopped. I don't know that will work, but it will keep it in the public eye, and we want these people, our elected leaders, to take that stance anyway.
Yeah, and I've written plenty of letters to the editor, and I mean, that's a good point. There's many things to write on. But to give an example of just how the media is anymore, is I live in Corvallis, and the Corvallis Gazette Times was just taken over by a company I'd never heard of called Lee Enterprises.
Uh-huh.
They actually closed down the office here, and they kept the one in Albany. But they literally got rid of the editor. They don't even feel like they need an editor anymore to run the newspaper.
I wondered that they're going to be putting in a whole lot of pre-gurgitated information, you know, information
that's
going out into other publications, and they're just going to be stuffing it with that and no real local news.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, I could go on about that, but, you know, so anything that I used to write to them, I don't plan to write to them anymore because it would be hopeless. But it does matter. You know, it's funny because I've been a part of that for a long time, of speaking out and writing letters and so forth. But it's interesting how many people, when I tell them, they say, why do you do that? What is it? It doesn't matter. And it's phenomenal how, in a way, people have become so apathetic and feeling so powerless in this, and they have to be reminded that you do have the power, and also if you reach just one or two people, that makes a huge difference if it snowballs. So
yeah, you never know when the information you gave out is going to take life in someone else to do something more. And I do think that, you know, it is single actions that become the one. And
always has been, and it's amazing how defeatist, really, though, it's unfortunate because I'm seeing more and more that's talked about, is how much more people are seeing a defeatist attitude and racial epithets and rudeness and so forth growing. And I think that this is something people really need to open their eyes to, is that this is starting to affect a lot of people.
Yeah, a pendulum has swung the other direction now, and we have to be aware that we have to fight it hard, because all over the world, this kind of nationalist, my people are better than your people. I mean, Aung San Suu Kyi, in international court, claiming
totally
that the
turned.
Murders and the rapes and the, you know, the burning of the homes and the driving of all the people, Rohingya, out of Myanmar is not a genocide, is not an ethnic cleansing. You know, everything feels a little crazy nowadays.
I don't want to take up any more time, but I do want to just leave this. And I mentioned this.
Okay, go ahead.
Also, but, you know, the very last chapter of Nancy McLean's Democracy Now!, it's so powerful because what she's talking about, ultimately what this is all about, and you see it, you know, you see it going on, is it's ultimately about getting rid of our Constitution altogether.
Yeah.
And it really is. People need to take this seriously, because so many of these things that are going on are directly tied to what she said and what you see happening. And I think people really need to stop being so, I don't know.
What's her name, Nancy?
Her name, Nancy McLean. She teaches at Duke, and she wrote the book Democracy Now! That came out right after Gene Meyer's Dark Money.
Dark Money. Okay, great. Thanks.
It's a really powerful book. I highly recommend anybody read it. To me, it's right in line with The Power When Shock Doctrine came out.
Okay, well, great. That's good to know. You know, we teach each other all the time. Well, thank you very much. I'm going to go to my next caller now. Okay, it's a woman. Welcome. Hello, you're on.
Hello. Yes, I have trouble speaking, but I had to thank you for this program. I've been so alarmed at the left for abandoning, seemingly, Julius and Chelsea Manning and Dennis Bernstein is the only one that has kept this issue alive, and it's so terribly important. Thank you for doing this program. That's all I can really say.
Well, thank you so much for calling in and for being a thoughtful listener and a thoughtful learner in the world. Obviously, you're paying attention to what's happening and you're taking your positions and understanding what's going on. So thank you very much for being one of our listeners. I'm going to let you Let's see. No, I got a few more minutes, so we've got one more call. If you'd like to get it in, you got just a few minutes, 2 minutes, 503-231-8187. What we've been talking about today is about Julian Assange being locked in Balmarsh Prison in London and literally deteriorating to the point where he has lost most of his weight. He looks 30 to 40 years older. He has difficulty remembering and being able to bring up his name when talking to his attorneys. He is being not allowed any physical contact, not allowed any writing materials, and is in very, very bad shape. And all of this is he's being held to be extradited to the United States to be tried on the Espionage Act. And we very much don't want that to happen. There's only been one person charged with that most recently, and her name is Reality Winner. You may not have heard of her, and so I'm going to spend a moment talking about her a little bit. She was an NSA contractor, and she's been jailed for 5 years over a classified report leak. She came across what she found was evidence for evidence of leaking of top secret documents about Russian interference in the U.S. election. Listen to the who they charged first with espionage. I find that very interesting. She was sentenced in a federal court in Georgia after pleading guilty in June as part of a deal with the prosecutors. She's the first person in the Trump administration who has been charged under the Espionage Act for document leak. Under Obama, the Espionage Act was used. And, you know, this is a resurgence as well. And we can talk to our legislators as well and say, put that act away and have it out only when it's for something that really is espionage. She didn't spy on this and give this to an enemy. She found out information she thought the American public deserved to know and had the right to know. And as such, let that out. She's doing 5 years in jail. Once again, that's her name, Reality Winner. I believe we have a caller on the line. Lisa, good morning.
Hi, how are you?
I'm good.
Great. Thanks for your work. It's great to have reasonable conversations again. I feel like we've turned a corner in the country. I feel freer than I have in a long time. And a return to the age of reason, because it has been so crazy and unreasonable the last 3 years. And, you know, I think the decadent 80s and 90s really kind of started this whole thing anyway. But we need to teach our kids self-esteem, because when we do that, they can resist all of the ills, suicide, drugs, alcoholism, all that stuff. They can resist all of that stuff if they have the self-esteem and the grit inside of them to resist it. Does that make sense?
I think it's true. I mean, it definitely the more sense of yourself's worth and the more sense of your ability to assess for yourself whether you're doing the right thing or the wrong thing, all of that goes for making a stronger individual, able to deal with the government's machinations and with propaganda and all the different ways that we're assaulted with not the truth. I think that doesn't mean there are plenty of people who've had very difficult lives and who have a lot of passion and anger that came out of those lives, you know, whether it's oppression for being a person of color or oppression for being a woman. And sometimes that can be very powerful as well. But I think teaching our children self-esteem is sort of the basis for whole, healthy human beings.
Amen. Well, thanks for your work. Have a great day.
Yeah, I appreciate you calling. Thanks very much. And that'll be it for the calls right now. This is Linda Olson-Osterlund with Voices from the Edge. We've been talking about Edward Snowden, well, very little about Edward Snowden, about Julian Assange and the real desperate situation he's in. I'm encouraging you to, you know, call your local senator or representative who you feel comfortable with and say, hey, he's locked up in a London prison, you know, deteriorating, and it's all for extradition here. Do something. You know, just put it in their hands. You do something that you can do. We're counting on you, Merkley or, you know, Blumenauer or Weigand, and do it, you know, because we need to take action, and every little action does add up. I firmly believe that. It's like every little snow makes a snowstorm or melts into a river, one of those things. Thank you all so much for tuning in. Thank you all for calling. And I want to thank John Shuck, our board op and engineer today. He's who you talk to when you call in initially. And I want to thank our new public affairs director, Tammy Hopteas. She's a great asset to KBOO, and we're all enjoying having her on board. Thanks again for listening.
Get up, stand up. Stand up for your right. Get up, stand up. Stand up for your right.
It's 8:59. This is KBOO Portland. Coming up next, it's Press Watch with Teresa Mitchell, her weekly look at the news you're not supposed to know. Flashpoints at 10 with Dennis Bernstein. At 11, it's Between the Covers, where host David Naiman will be discussing the Book of Lost Saints, an evocative, multi-generational Cuban-American family story of revolution, loss, and family bonds with New York Times best-selling author Daniel Jose Older. At 11:30, it's Words and Pictures, conversations with pioneering animators and comics artists. KBOO Community Radio is included in this year's Willamette Week Give Guide. Support KBOO in Give Guide today, and you'll be eligible for a Music Lover's Platinum Access Pass. You could win a Tender Loving Empire vinyl package and weekend passes to Treefort Music Fest, Sisters Folk Festival, McMenamin's Sabretooth Fest, Oregon Jamboree, Hair Fest, and two tickets to the select show of your choice at the Portland Jazz Festival. The Give Guide is an easy, secure way to make a gift to KBOO. Every gift is appreciated, and the Give Guide processes amounts starting at $10 online through an easy-to-use, secure platform. So go to kboo.fm/give for more information and to donate to your community radio station. And thank you. It's 9 o'clock.
KBOO Community Radio holds open meetings concerning the operations and programming of KBOO in accordance with requirements of the Communications Act of 1934 and certification requirements of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Information about KBOO Community Radio's open meeting policy is available by calling the station at 503-231-8032. Meetings will be held at 20 Southeast 8th Avenue in Portland. The events committee meets the third Monday of every month at 5 o'clock p.m.